Good morning from 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, and welcome to our election special candidates forum. As each Sunday this month, we speak to one candidate running for local or state office. Now here are your hosts, Bob McAdams and Jeff Leonard.
Good Sunday morning, Charlottesville. I am Jeff Leonard, general manager 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
And I'm Bob McAdams, Special Events Coordinator at WPVC.
Today we're hosting, or co-hosting at least, a WPVC election special. One of our interviews with a candidate seeking to represent our area in the state Senate. WPVC does not endorse any candidates for a public office. However, we do provide this information to you, our listeners, to help you make the best choice for office.
With us in the studio this morning is Democratic State Senate candidate Amy Laufer, who is seeking to represent the 17th Senate District. For the record, we offered a one-hour interview to her Republican opponent, Bryce Rees, but he did not respond. Amy, welcome to WPVC.
Thank you for having me.
Amy, let's start by learning a little of your history. Where were you born and what was your life like as you were growing up?
Sure. So I grew up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. I'm one of eight children, and in order for our farm to survive, each one of us kids had to work picking stones, baling hay, milking and feeding the cows, and every other kind of job you can imagine, as well as getting good grades, and when we were old enough, getting a paying job. And I know we're going to talk about my education next.
But
that's it. Eight kids. I shared a bed with my sister. The house was small.
So what education and what work background do you have, and how has that prepared you to serve as a member of the Senate?
Sure. I'm proud to say I'm first-generation college graduate. I went to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I have a degree, a bachelor's of science degree in geology. I funded my whole education. I worked multiple jobs, including packing fish in Alaska, and it took me nearly 6 years to graduate. But after college, I volunteered in the Peace Corps, and I was stationed at an elementary school outside of Kingston, Jamaica. And my greatest takeaway from that experience was that education is the foundation to a healthy society, and I wanted to become a teacher. So I came back, and I earned my master's in education from Teachers College, Columbia University. And my first job in Virginia was as a middle school math and science teacher in Louisa County. When my second child, or our second child, was born, he had a rare medical condition, and I had to stay home with him to take care of him. But while I was at home, I was appointed to the Commission for Children and Families in Albemarle County and Charlottesville to represent families that had children with special needs. And then eventually I ran for the Charlottesville School Board, and I was elected twice. I served as vice chair and chair. And we had a lot of successes, a lot of challenges, but while I was there, we reached an all-time high graduation rate in Charlottesville.
Now, Amy, you're seeking to be a senator from the 17th District. What area does the 17th District cover?
Yes, so it's pretty big. In general, I say it's the area between Charlottesville and Fredericksburg. So it's the northeastern portion of Albemarle County, and then it is parts of Culpeper City, all of Orange County, most of Louisa County, about half of Spotsylvania County, and then all of Fredericksburg.
All right, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, 17th District Senate Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in studio today is Amy Laufer. Amy, how have you been active? You've touched on it a bit, but how have you been active in recent years to help improve life in Central Virginia?
So I was on the school board for 7 years. And while I was on the school board, you know, we were lobbying in Richmond and on the federal government. And from my time in Richmond, I realized how few women at that point were elected to state office. And so I founded an organization called Virginia's List. It supports Democratic women running for state office. And, you know, I really wanted to do that because I wanted, like, women like my child, my daughter, to have role models. And I also think that when you vary the background of our elected officials, you get better results. And I'm proud to say that we've supported all the women that have won thus far.
So you've had some success with that.
Yes.
Congratulations. As you know, from the primary, running for a seat in the Senate is a big deal. It takes a lot of sacrifice, and I know you have three. You and Aaron have three kids. Why now? Why are you willing to do this?
You know, I think many reasons, but you know, just from lobbying on the school board, I know how important it is to elect officials that are actually listening to people and actively trying to solve problems. And I can say, as a mom of a child with major medical issues, I'm tired of fighting the insurance companies every year. And I can tell you, as a school board member, watching our funding decrease every year, you know, we need a state government that's really proactive in what is going on in our lives. And I can tell you, a lot of our district does not have broadband. These are all issues that can be solved on the state government level. So, yeah, those are some of the reasons I'm running.
So the issue, at least the district, as I see it, is fairly rural, is it not?
Yeah, actually, a lot of it is.
And it touches into a few towns and cities, but it looks like it was carved up specifically for maybe someone running on the Republican ticket. Is it gerrymandered, do you think?
Possibly.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 17th District State Senate Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Amy Laufer. Now, Amy, in the lead-up to the August 11th and 12th of 2017, especially during the month after the July 8th KKK rally, Charlottesville City Council struggled to deal with the permit request for the Unite the Right rally. A dilemma was there of having to choose between free speech and public safety. What should the state government do to support any municipality in Virginia facing a similar potentially violent event?
Yeah, I mean, I was at every single one of those events. I witnessed it firsthand, and we really cannot allow that to happen again. And I think allowing localities the freedom to make decisions they need to keep everyone safe is something that our state government should be doing. You know, and we also need a government that is, you know, welcoming to everyone, and making it clear that there's no room for hate and intolerance in our state.
You know, those events in Charlottesville on August 11th and 12th, they showed the overt racism of white supremacists, and the mass shootings in Texas, California, Pennsylvania, they all confirm the Southern Poverty Law Center reports of a rapid increase in the number of hate groups over the past 2 years. How should the General Assembly respond to the overt racism of white supremacy?
Right. Yes. I mean, I absolutely agree that this is happening. White supremacy and racism are harming our state and our country, and we need to ensure that we are creating a welcoming environment. And it also means that we need to deal with policies that have been enacted many, many years ago. We need to reform our criminal justice system. We need to realize that, you know, disproportionate that our criminal justice system affects people of color. And we need to be ensuring that when people have gone into the criminal justice system, that they are able and to come back into our communities as full participating citizens with voting rights and helping to find jobs, helping to find housing. You know, I think we definitely need, as a General Assembly, should respond to these issues.
Go ahead, Bob.
The events of July and August of 2017 also uncovered covert racism, which you've just been mentioning, and that's been embedded in our institutions over many years. It's been 2 years since those August events. Where do you think we are now in race relations in the 17th district, and where are we headed? And where do you think we are now in race relations in Virginia as a whole, and where are we headed?
Well, I think it's obvious that we still have a long way to go in our state and to ensure that people of color are truly treated equally.
So I know from previous conversations with you, the events of August 12th had a pretty profound effect on you here locally. When you travel out in the district and people sort of figure that you're near the Charlottesville urban area, is it top of mind to them? Do they talk about it? Or is what's top of mind to them more pressing of what's going on in their sort of local micro communities?
I would say It's definitely impacted everybody, I think, in various degrees. I would say absolutely people are troubled by what happened here, you know, and making it a defining moment of our country as it was. And what do we do from here? I would say everybody wants to improve the situation. Like, they do not feel comfortable with this being the tenor of our country. But also there's other issues that are really, you know, uppermost in their mind. And a lot of that is healthcare, access and affordability. And much of the district has actually grown very fast. And education is a major topic of interest as well, because we see in Fredericksburg, it's grown by 17% in the past 6 years. They absolutely need new schools. We see the same pressures in Albemarle County. So there's other things that are of interest to everybody in the district. But absolutely everyone recognizes this cannot continue. This kind of hatred, you know, and this treatment cannot continue.
And I grew up in Chesterfield County, and it seems like we were opening a high school every 3 or 4 years. I don't even remember. I guess Monticello was the last one we built around here, and that was many years ago. You know, prejudice comes in many forms. Women still earn less than men for doing the same work. Members of the LGBTQ community can be fired without cause for simply being who they are. What should our state government do to overcome these injustices?
Well, I can say we need to absolutely pass the Equal Rights Amendment. We know that 81% of Virginians agreed with passing it, and the fact that we couldn't pass it this session just tells you that we need to flip the state Senate and the House of Delegates to be able to do the things that we care about. And I can tell you, my opponent, you know, he voted to discriminate for LGBTQ community in housing and in jobs. And I think we cannot tolerate having an elected official that's legalizing discrimination against anyone, because the next year it'll be another group and another group until they're discriminating against you. It's very dangerous, and it's not only morally wrong. We know that it has a fiscal component as well. We see states that have had these discriminatory policies in Georgia and North Carolina, that businesses are fleeing those states. And I truly believe we need to ensure that Virginia is a welcoming state to all, and morally as well as financially, it's important.
You know, if rights for all are important to you, our listeners, and especially LGBTQ rights, I would encourage you to do some research on the Google machine as to where both candidates stand on these rights. I think the difference is fairly stark. Gun violence takes the lives of Virginians every day. After the mass shooting in Virginia Beach, Governor Northam called a special session of the Virginia General Assembly to address specific gun legislation. On July 9th, the General Assembly abruptly adjourned that session without acting on any bills. How do you assess the problem of gun violence, and what laws do you believe the General Assembly should enact in response?
Well, I can say that I was in Richmond for the special session, and I, as well as the thousands of people that were there, were hopeful that there was going to be some determinations made. And what we saw was 90 minutes of no conversation and everybody left. And for our elected officials to ignore this issue, it's unconscionable. You know, my own children come home and say they don't think they can fit behind the teacher's desk if something were to happen. And I know I am like many other parents, that when the phone rings and it's the school, you wonder if this is the time that something's happened. We cannot ignore this issue. We know that the majority of Virginians want universal background checks. They want red flag laws where if somebody is in crisis, family and friends can approach the local law enforcement to temporarily take weapons away from the person that's in crisis. We know actually in Stafford County, there was a situation where a family member was in crisis. The police were called and the police officer was killed on the scene. And this is a great example of why these kind of laws could help people. And the other thing that we know is that banning high capacity magazines is something that the majority of Virginians want. And I can tell you my opponent blocked that this year. I think we need elected officials that are taking seriously this issue of gun violence prevention. And I know that we can do better. The bottom line is we need to save lives. We know many people commit suicide. We are trying to prevent deaths. And I think that's very important that our elected officials realize that.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Amy. That was a great discussion. Need to take a short break. And we're back. I'm Jeff Leonard. I'm co-hosting with my friend Bob McAdams, a 94.7 WPVC election special interview with 17th District Senate candidate Amy Laufer. Bob and Amy, we're talking about the issues.
And the issues don't get any easier. Having health care available in a time of need is a necessity for all people in our area. Lowering the high cost of health insurance is another need for many people in the 17th District. What efforts by state government to address these real concerns do you support, and what further actions are needed?
Well, I think absolutely expanding Medicaid was a huge win for Virginia. You know, 400,000 people became eligible and actually signed up. We also know, though, that they had, a work requirement for Medicaid expansion, and 20,000 people currently are not eligible for the Medicaid expansion because they are unable to work, and it's mainly because they are very sick. So I think, first of all, we have to make sure that people are healthy so that they can participate in the economy. So we need to take away that work requirement. But then we also know Albemarle County, that a couple of years ago, this was the most expensive place in the country for insurance. And at that time, we only had one insurance company. Now we have two. We need to make sure that we have competition. We need to allow more companies to come into the space so that it can lower the costs. But I also, we also can be expanding our Medicaid or our, actually just coverage by expanding broadband, which I know we're going to talk about. But I think we also need to allow people to buy into Medicaid if they are unable to get insurance through their work, or if it's too cost prohibitive.
Now, access to health care, that's a challenge for many Virginians, but getting care for mental illness or substance abuse is even more of a challenge. Mm-hmm. Yet limits to insurance coverage and the lack of professionals in the field mean that many people with mental health problems simply go untreated. What should the state do to help people with mental illness and substance abuse get the care they need, particularly in light of the opioid epidemic?
I'm so glad you brought this up. Mental health issues need to be addressed, and the opioid epidemic is a huge problem across the Commonwealth. And as I said, much of this district, as Jeff has said, is rural. And I believe expanding our health care could mean by expanding broadband. What we know is that interior, like Orange and Louisa, people are driving for hours to get care and then sitting in waiting rooms for hours. This is a major barrier to anyone seeking mental health services or even just, medical services. If we can expand broadband, people can be receiving medical care from their homes. And by the way, this is done in a lot of other places. I know myself for my own son's treatment that a lot of time we get on the phone and just do it through FaceTime and Skype. I think that could be helping us. I know that we need to be funding more counselors in our schools. I know we're going to be talking about raising the minimum wage. I think a lot of what we're experiencing right now is that families are under so much pressure because of the depression of our minimum wage and how holding that down is causing a lot of other issues. So there's certainly a lot of ways that we could address mental health issues.
Well, to your point, the telemedicine is just right there for us.
Right.
And, I know some of the local, talking to some of the local jail, at least the prison system is using some telemedicine to cut down on transportation. And the fact that we just can't log on because we don't have broadband and get a doctor online is, shame on us for that.
Yeah, 25% of the district does not have broadband access. There's so many implications to that, which I know we're going to cover later.
All right, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, 17th District Senate candidate form. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in studio today is Amy Laufer. Amy, mental illness leads to our criminal justice system. The superintendent of the Charlottesville Regional Jail has said 50% of the people in jail suffer from some form of mental illness, and 80% have substance abuse problems. Other jails and prisons in Virginia likely have the same problems. What changes in our criminal justice system are needed, and what should the General Assembly do to address this new reality?
Well, we certainly don't want to be criminalizing mental health issues, and unfortunately that seems to be what is happening. We need to be encouraging the use of diversion programs for mental illness and substance abuse programs. We know that those programs are both effective and cost savings. And as I said, criminalizing these issues is not going to solve the problem. And also, we need to make sure that when people are through either the programs or their what's going on with them, we need to be able to help them rejoin our communities so they can be contributing members of society with voting rights, helping with housing, and finding jobs.
You know, talk more. I'd like to talk more about that stigma of sort of the stigma of criminality and the stigma of mental illness. I've made a career of working with those individuals, and it really is hard for people to reintegrate. What have you seen, or what do you think could happen with that?
Well, I can say anecdotally throughout the district, each locality is kind of tackling this in a different way. I think making sure that every locality has the resources they need to be helping people readjust back successfully. You know, I know Louisa has a great program, of course, underfunded, you know, but approaching folks before they get out to help them plan and strategize to the next step of finding a job, finding housing, you know, this actually will grow our economy, having people successfully rejoin our communities. And by the way, help our children, you know, when their parents are incarcerated. There's so many effects on so many levels.
Before I left the state, I was on the Louisa Reentry Council for a while, and I will tell you, I agree. They've done an excellent job down there of getting all the stakeholders at the table, and they should be lauded for that.
Yeah, I agree.
Statistics reveal another issue with criminal justice. That's systemic racism. From police stops to prosecutions to incarceration, whites have a clear advantage over people of color. What should the General Assembly do to make sure all Virginians can trust that justice is equally administered to police officers from police officers, prosecuting attorneys, judges, probation officers, and prison staff? That's a big question.
It is a big question. I think it's very understandable, the lack of trust in criminal justice system for many citizens of color. You know, it's really heartbreaking when you hear parents talking to their children about how to be around police officers or law enforcement. You know, we have to first recognize that that is what we're dealing with. People are terrified. And also, you know, just what I know is we don't have very good collection or data across the state. And having better systems taking a note of this, I think, could go a long way to solving this issue, as well as better training for our law enforcement, you know.
You know, we are usually offended or questions when our schools for our kids go through these active shooter drills, but, you know, communities of color for years have had to train, especially young black men, on how to act in police stops by, you know, showing your hands and making no quick movements and being respectful. I think that's an unfortunate thing.
Yeah, I think it's also the reality that we're trying to work towards changing that. You know, being respectful to everyone in this regard.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 17th District State Senate Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams. Now, Amy, the release of 2019 SOL scores show that the achievement gap based on race, ethnicity, and economic disadvantage remains throughout the state, despite efforts by several school divisions to close that gap. I mean, you'd know about that.
Mm-hmm.
What role does the state government have in this problem, and what should the General Assembly do to address it?
Well, I talk a lot about preschool because, you know, I myself was a Head Start student, and I know that as a school board member, when we have children entering the system and if they're already behind, it's so much more difficult to help them be successful. And I absolutely believe we should have a universal preschool. you know, not only would that help children be more successful in school, but also help families who are really struggling to pay for daycare to find an appropriate place. So I think universal preschool, starting, you know, on an even playing field from the beginning is important. I also think making sure that in the back end, when we're talking about middle school, high school, that we are providing several pathways for people to be successful. You know, the standards of learning is one assessment, but we put a lot of pressure on it. Whereas we know some children don't do that well on standardized tests, and they might be doing better in other ways. And we need to make sure we have plenty of choices for kids to be successful. And I also think that the General Assembly can be, you know, we know our teachers are earning $5,000 less on average than any other teacher across the country. And that really impacts their quality of life and teacher retention. So the General Assembly can do a lot about this, I think.
Now, the recently released housing needs assessment for Planning District 10, which includes Central Virginia, shows that many people in the area struggle to afford a place to live. There are many groups calling for more affordable housing, which brings up related concerns about racial disparities in homeownership and substandard rural housing. What role does the state have in efforts to increase the availability of affordable housing?
Well, I would definitely agree that affordable housing is a huge issue in Virginia and in my district in particular. We know that living in Fredericksburg on a minimum wage is next to impossible. This problem leads to multi-pronged solution. I think, you know, first we need to ensure the availability of housing, first of all. We need to be building enough to support the needs we have, but also need to ensure that people can afford to live in the area that they work. That's why I support a minimum wage that's tied to the cost of living in localities. You know, as I said, the district is Albemarle County to Fredericksburg, and minimum wage increase to living wage is different throughout the district. But I think that is a way to tackle the affordable housing issue.
So to follow up on that, you know, higher pay would make housing and everything else more affordable. Virginia has a minimum hourly wage of $7.25. A bill to increase the minimum wage in stages to $15 an hour failed in the Senate this year. The most recent Orange Dot report showed the great number of people in Central Virginia, including Louisa and Albemarle, who cannot afford to pay for the basic necessities. What should the state do to address the income inequalities and bring wages up to a livable wage? You touched on that briefly, but do you think there's a chance that the Senate will revisit? And what do you think?
I think we will revisit this. You know, the minimum wage has not been raised in a decade. And what we've seen is that, you know, the Dow Jones has increased by 400% in that time. So the disparity is real. And I think because of holding down minimum wage for so long, you know, people are having to make decisions that might not be great for their family, but they're doing it because they can't afford to do anything else. Like they're deciding between food and medicine, or they're deciding on using a non-regulated daycare because they can't afford a regulated daycare. There's just so many issues that are affected by wages. And, you know, I do think a stepped approach is, you know, would be appropriate, but also a regional look is the thing that I would be advocating for.
You know, people living in rural areas don't always have the same infrastructure available as urban dwellers, including water, roads, and communications. Here it is. The lack of broadband access to the Internet affects businesses, families, and especially students. As rural counties continue to struggle to provide these services, how is the state helping, and what actions should the General Assembly take to provide access to the Internet?
So there are a lot of programs available. So first of all, 25% of the district doesn't have broadband access. I mean, just imagine driving home right now and not being able to get on the Internet. Like, what does that mean to your life?
How do the kids do Google Docs when their teachers require it?
Well, I will tell you this. So in Louisa County, you're issued your Chromebook, and then you're also given a piece of paper to tell you that you can go to Sheets, McDonald's, and the library. So we're telling children
Sheets
to go.
Is nice, but it's not right. A place to do your homework.
Exactly. So we're basically telling students to go to a gas station to go do their homework at night. It's like setting them off a cliff, you know. And then not only is this affecting children, but then imagine the farmers that can't actually get markets because, you know, the internet would be a really great way to access people that want their goods. And then we go into medicine, how that could absolutely expand accessible, affordable health care to rural areas. And there's a lot of barriers. First of all, you know, there is the federal program to map the area to find out where the holes are. And unfortunately, the map is created by the people providing internet service. So they're the ones reporting.
We're doing a great job.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, even if only one home within 177 acres has broadband, that is now determined as has broadband. So the area is way too large that they're reporting into. Having people providing it reporting isn't good. So that the first step would absolutely be to make better maps and have the people that are actually living there consuming it reporting how good the broadband is. And then the next step is there's the barriers that exist really are the easements through properties, both publicly and privately owned, as well as railroads. So the state government trying to make that an easier process. I mean, Orange County is actually paying, I think it's like $10,000 a year for easements for broadband. We also know that the program to expand broadband to the schools has been effective, but the very wire that's been laid for the schools is not being accessed by the rest of the community. So allowing that to be opened up would also be beneficial. I think there's a lot that the state government can do, and I really want to work on this issue.
God, I'm stunned that the school system hands out public internet places like gas stations and McDonald's. And I guess you have to make do, but that's stunning to me. All right, thanks,
agreed.
Amy. Thanks, Amy. We need to interrupt this discussion. Take another short break. Hi, I'm Jeff Leonard, General Manager of 94.7 WPVC.
And I'm Bob McAdams. At WPVC, I'm the Special Events Coordinator.
Together, we're co-hosting the WPVC election specials. They're one-hour interviews with candidates for state and local office.
Jeff, to interview as many candidates as possible, we need to borrow 1 hour of your Monday afternoon roundtable.
To help our listeners elect the best candidate, I'd be happy to do so. So, Bob, who will we interview next?
This coming Monday at 4 o'clock, we'll have Ann Malik in our studio. Ann is a Democratic candidate for supervisor from the Whitehall District of Albemarle County. You can learn all about Ann and how she plans to address the problems facing Albemarle County. That's this coming Monday at 4 o'clock, an interview with Ann Malik, candidate for Albemarle supervisor from the Whitehall District.
As with all of our election specials, after the interview is broadcast, it'll be available on podcast through our website, 947wpvc.org. We're back. I'm Jeff Leonard, and I am co-hosting with Bob McAdams, the 94.7 WPVC election special interview with 17th District Senate candidate Amy Laufer. Bob and Amy, we've got one more segment to talk about the issues.
Yeah. Amy, recent reports from scientists tell us that the climate change crisis is much worse than previously understood, with years, not decades, to act. And young people who understand the urgency of this crisis are condemning the lack of action by older people who are in positions of power. I mean, we had these climate strikes just a week or two ago by students. Now, this crisis overlays all the other problems we've discussed. What should the state government do to accelerate reduction of greenhouse gas emissions and hasten the transition to renewable energy sources?
Well, I'm glad you're bringing this up. I mean, I do have a degree in science, and part of why I'm running is because I don't think we can tolerate the fact that elected officials are denying that this is happening. This interview is happening in October when it's like 100 degrees out still. So these are anecdotal notes, but we've seen the progression to these crazy weather systems that are now part of our norm. And I'm really inspired to see so many young people working on this issue. You know, I say this actually all the time. I was in college like 20 some years ago and we were talking about this. As a science teacher, I was teaching about this. We cannot deny this. And, you know, a lot of great movements were started by children. So I'm really excited that we have young people taking action on this. I think there is a lot the state can be doing. you know, a couple sessions ago, we the legislature adopted that a third of the state's energy would be from renewable sources. And I applaud that effort. I think we can go further. I also think part of what we need to do is upgrade our grid so that people that have solar panels can fully sell back all of the energy they're making. That's extra, because right now there's a cap at 1%. And we know that if we're going to get to a third, we need a lot of people creating energy and selling it back to the grid. Also, we know that there's the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative that the General Assembly decided not to participate in, which is a multi-state approach to reducing greenhouse gases. I think we should absolutely be part of that. And we need to be moving towards more green and renewable energy. You know, I mentioned the solar panels. We also have wind energy. I can tell you my own hometown has become, you know, farming windmills.
They cause cancer, don't they? Can you imagine? Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
But, you know, we know so much more and can be so much more effective with green energy. We need to be adopting more of it. And, you know, also just providing the skills necessary to our young people and people transitioning into new employment, the opportunities to learn how to install these. You know, there's a lot that can be done, and the state is a great way to make it happen.
Now, we've talked about several issues, including broadband and the changing our energy system. So all candidates have these aspirations for problem solving, but eventually they're going to meet the limits of the state budget. How do you think the General Assembly should reconcile the needs for real change with the level of revenue coming from current taxes? And what new sources of revenue could the state use to meet the needs of the people?
Well, we know this year we had a budget surplus, as we have several times. I think it's really a question of investment and priorities. I believe that investing in our schools and in renewable energy will actually grow our economy. And I think, you know, we can see that that's true. Also, investing in healthcare and our infrastructure, these are ways to grow the economy. Having a well-educated and healthy populace that has access to the tools they need to be successful will build our economy. You know, and these investments are necessary to our future success. You know, that's what I believe.
All right. Since I'm old and I watch television sometimes, you can't escape the advertising that is going on. And what is your opponent calling you, laughably liberal or something like that, saying that you've never met a tax that you wouldn't want to raise? Do you care to respond to that nonsense?
Well, I think it's really disappointing. He's using my work on the school board to talk about this issue. And unfortunately, I guess he doesn't realize that local school boards have no taxing authority. And as you guys remember, I did run for the city council, and I actually ran on the fact that I would not raise taxes because there is surplus. So unfortunately, it's just misinformation that's out there.
I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. For local governments to meet the needs of their residents, they must have the authorization from the General Assembly to either through general laws applicable to all or through the special acts of individual governments. What do you think the relationship between the General Assembly and the local government should be?
Well, first of all, I think they really need to be working together. I can say that my opponent, you know, regularly does not meet with locally elected officials to find out their legislative priorities. And I would say that I would be doing that. you know, meeting with folks and understanding what the issues are is the way an elected official advocates for the benefit of the community they're serving. So, you know, it should be top priority that communications through elected officials and constituents on is the way that a senator would advocate for the needs of their localities.
So I have a question about the Dillon Rule. Who supports it? You know, why do we still have it? Why can't a locality do what they want with its stuff?
Well, we know that when it was enacted, it was to basically make sure the state government you know, and taxing authority was through the state. You know, I think there's a lot of reasons that you'd want to make sure that there's a standard. We don't want any community to be discriminating against anybody, you know, through their local policies, of course. But it absolutely needs to be revisited that communities should have more autonomy to make decisions that make sense for their constituents.
You know, everybody I talk to is like, oh, I'm against it. I'm going to change it. But then when they go down to Richmond, they're like, oh, we love the power. Let's keep it. You know, people often, people often feel frustrated with the lack of action by the General Assembly. The governmental system in Virginia seems designated designed to prevent change. The General Assembly is in session for only 60 days on even-numbered years and 45 days on the odd. In that brief time, legislators will continue a few thousand bills. Most are killed sort of anonymously in subcommittee. How do you plan on getting things done in the General Assembly if you're elected?
Well, I think having such short sessions really is, you know, difficult, without a doubt. But, you know, I'm passionate about working with everyone in the state and coming up with common sense solutions to everyday problems affecting the people of my district. And I'd hope to work effectively with both Democrats and Republicans to ensure that we're passing legislation that we know will benefit everyone.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 17th District State Senate Forum interview with Amy Laufer. I'm Bob McAdams. Amy, you're running for state senator from the 17th District, and as you said, the district extends over a wide area from Fredericksburg to Albemarle. How will you engage voters leading up to the November 5th election, and how can voter participation be increased in all elections?
So I can tell you that we have knocked thousands of doors, and I have too, to make sure that we're engaging every voter everywhere. You know, I've also agreed to take part in a number of forums and legislative receptions across the district in the hopes of hearing about issues affecting everyone. And I just really think voting is essential. It's one of the best ways for us to increase voter participation is to make it easier for people to vote. I think we need to be guaranteeing that everyone who wants to vote is able to be voting by eliminating photo IDs and instituting no excuse early voting. You know, we want to make sure that people are able to vote, and that's the way we could increase voter participation.
Now, every campaign needs to pay for the basics to get the candidate's message to those, to as many people as possible. At the same time, corporate money and corporate lobbying are seen as preventing government from taking action on real issues facing the people. How will you raise the funds to pay for those basics for your campaign? And what do you think should be done about the influence of money in state politics?
Well, I'm really proud to say that we have had over 2,800 individual donors for our race, and a lot of people giving in small dollar amounts. And that's a lot of how we are funding this campaign. And I myself have taken a pledge not to take any money from Dominion or Appalachian because I believe that allowing politicians to accept limitless contributions from organizations that they will be regulating by the legislature is a clear conflict of interest. And it should not be allowed. Many other states ban that from happening, and I think we should too. I also believe we need to be limiting campaign contributions as they do on the federal level so that politicians aren't beholden to anyone but their constituents.
Right now, anyone can donate as much as they want to any candidate so that somebody could really buy an election.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, Amy, if you're elected in January of 2020, you'll be serving in a newly elected state Senate. What legislation will be your highest priorities in the new General Assembly session?
Sure. My top legislative priority would be to guarantee access to affordable health care. I've heard too many stories from voters and personally know that how afraid people are to lose their health care and that things have had to be given up to make ends meet after a health care emergency. We know 41% of bankruptcies are from health care issues. So making sure people have affordable access to health care. I'm also passionate about improving our public education. As I had mentioned, universal preschool, I believe, is to ensure access to quality education and to be the most successful they can be. And finally, I would absolutely make it a goal to pass the Equal Rights Amendment and guarantee equal pay for equal work for women.
Now, the November 5th election is coming up quickly. If you get elected, you have to win the support of many voters in the 17th district. How would you describe your candidacy or your campaign when the moment or two that you have with people when you knock on their door or get them on the phone?
Well, I'm running for state senate because I want to work on issues affecting people's everyday lives. Health care, education, broadband access, transportation. I want to listen to people's problems, and I really am a problem solver, and I think it's from growing up on a farm. You can't look to anyone else to solve the problem. You really have to dig in and work on it. So that's what I'm talking about.
So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you and your campaign, to learn more about you, to volunteer and possibly donate?
Sure. Please visit my website at www.lawforvirginia.com. That's L-A-U, F like Frank, E-R, F-O-R, V-I-R-G-I-N-I-A. Read about our issues. Come, you can sign up to volunteer, you can donate, and please get involved.
All right. So, I mean, we've got a couple minutes left. Let's bring up transportation. You know, transportation isn't something that's sort of on the mind of a lot of people in the sort of the Charlottesville urban ring, but you go well beyond. So what are your thoughts on transportation, specifically over toward Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania?
I think transportation is an issue that affects each part of this district a little bit differently. We know 60% of people that live in the district actually are driving somewhere else to work. So certainly it's an issue all along, but we know that actually 60,000 people from Spotsylvania and Fredericksburg are commuting on I-95 every day. And I know we don't live out that way, but I've been on there plenty of times where it's like a parking lot. And really one thing that people really want to see is a regional transit authority so that Spotsylvania, Fredericksburg, Stafford, the local communities can have better authority on how to fix this issue. And that's been blocked multiple times by the General Assembly. There's other regional authorities across the state. So that's something that we should absolutely be working on. A couple of years ago, they expanded I-95 by, I think, two or three more lanes. And what they included with those lanes was express lanes and high occupancy vehicle, HOV lanes. But what we know is that when there is a traffic situation, to be on the express lane, you have to pay an extra fee. And sometimes the fees are as much as $30 to $40 for one trip. So we know that that's not a sustainable way to help people get to and from work. We know that we already have a VRE, which sometimes gets delayed because it has to allow the cargo rail to go first. So providing a rail so that that can be dedicated for rail to and from the Northern Virginia and Fredericksburg. And then beyond that, there's been a lot of talk and work on a light rail that would actually serve all the way down to North Carolina. And it's been blocked a couple times. There's a lot of there's a lot of discussion about it. I think having elected officials that are going to really sit down and try to problem solve so that we can improve the quality of life of 60,000 people. We know people are waking up at 4 a.m. to get to work and then getting home. I can tell you any meeting that I have there usually starts at 8 or 9 p.m. because they know that that's when people get home from work. So I think we can all agree that that's not sustainable, and improving the transportation on that side of the district would help a lot of folks.
That also relates to the climate change and reducing greenhouse gases, because you got a parking lot on I-95. Just think of all the carbon dioxide that's going into the atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's on so many levels would this improve not only the quality of life, but the quality of our air.
Well, thanks, Amy. But unfortunately, we run out of time. We would like to thank Amy Lawfer for appearing in studio for our 94.7 WPVC election special. Please join us next Sunday at 10 o'clock for an additional interview.